topics are coming up now. This is something that came out of discussions in recent ICANN meetings, and most notably in Brussels, where it was thought that it might be useful for us to have an official set topic agenda, for a session during the day. So that's what we've tried to accommodate for this ICANN meeting, and we'll see how that goes. With that said, the topics are up there. I can read through them if you want me to. If that's perhaps I'll just quickly do that for the benefit of the board members coming into the room, and then just open it up for questions. So the topics that we prepared in advance, there's a conversation on REC 6 and the applicant support and the strengths and weaknesses of the REC 6 group's output to date, and how to best carry these initiatives forward. Following topic is a discussion around the next challenges for the new GTLD process, next steps for VI, vertical integration, lowering barriers for special projects, outcome of the outreach activities that have been done so far. Next topic is on the affirmation of commitments and what has been achieved so far in that regard. And we had a final topic on the possible measure of success of the new GTLD program. So perhaps I can open it up for discussion there and start taking a cue and ask anybody that wants to speak to please raise their hand. So this is going to be a short session. Well, perhaps we can start by just taking the first topic and seeing how the board feels about the REC 6 recommendations that they've received, if there's any thought on that. Bruce, please go ahead.
I think the board perspective on recommendation 6 from the meeting where we discussed it in Trondheim was the board generally thought that many of the recommendations that made sense should be incorporated. The only area that we may have misunderstood, but certainly was of concern, was the concept of the board itself acting as a dispute resolution body for deciding whether a particular name should or should not be accepted. You know, we strongly felt that that is a topic that should be dealt with by experts that have experience in making those sort of decisions, and that's why we're using an external dispute resolution forum for that topic. So really our perspective was that where there were good suggestions, such as changing the name from morality and public order to something more useful, suggestions such as adding additional international treaties, all those things I think broadly we thought were good. The only thing we were most concerned about was the board itself, which is essentially a committee of 21 people with diverse skills. Only a few of us, and certainly not including me, have any legal training, really that particular morality in public order is something that you want people that are legally trained and understand the international laws and conventions that apply to such a name. So that I guess would be how I'd summarise it. And then from then, the staff were then working. We see the staff's role then is to work with the working group and see that they can incorporate as much of the good suggestions as possible. We haven't really got down to micromanage which suggestions should be incorporated or not, but really left it to staff to work with the working group to do so.
Thanks, Bruce. Any follow-up questions to that? I do have one clarification question, if I may. You just said that you are expecting staff to work with the working group. You're talking about the cross-community working group. So you're expecting staff to work with that group through their recommendations and try and implement them as best possible.
Yes.
People on remote won't hear your answer otherwise. Does anyone else want to speak to that?
If I could ask, maybe I'll ask it as a question, because I don't think really understand this, but maybe someone from that working group perhaps articulate what they had in mind with what they thought the board's role was, because I don't think really understand that. I'm hearing lots of different versions of that. There's a version that we understood. Then I'm hearing other people say, no, we didn't mean it to be that way. So if someone could articulate what they think the board's role should be in making a decision on a particular string.
Mary.
Thanks, Stefan. And I know some people in this room have heard me on this already, but I'm happy to comment on behalf of the working group. There are working group members here, so I'm sure they'll correct me if I'm wrong, if I've left something out. I think the basic idea, as was explained and as you've explained as well, is that the board does take or should take ultimate responsibility for the decisions. I think the discomfort that the working group worked with emanated from a line in the DAG that basically simply said, ICANN will accept the decisions of the experts or something like that. And the question was then raised, well, what does that mean? Will the board actually review the decision? And that was the starting point of the discussion. It was not intended that the board be the primary trier of fact or go through everything. It was certainly envisaged, and I think a large number of the working group agree that the board should be allowed and probably are best advised to consult external experts, but that the board not simply accept the decision of the experts without at least some sort of review.
Any other comments to this point? Okay, well, in that case, we'll move on. Oh, sorry.
Excuse me, this is the coordinator. Did you need me to dial out to Rafiq?
By all means, please dial out to Rafiq.
Thank you.
So just speaking as a board member who will not have to worry about this for much longer, this issue has been one of the most irritating ones in many ways, including that it's always been very hard to get to grips with what are the requirements for a process so that people will call it right or correct or useful.
Excuse me, this is the coordinator. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay, so now we're officially on the record. So one of the things that was central to the whole TLD program was the idea that we should be able to let an application go through the entire process and be approved or rejected without having to have 21 randomly selected members with randomly selected skills spend an infinity of hot air debating the situation for each and every one of them. So it was a bit worrying when one reading of the recommendation of the working group seemed to suggest that the board would absolutely have to consider each and every single TLD separately, individually, and at length. We would much rather be in a position where if the board discovers that the process has gotten totally has done something totally bizarre, the board has the overarching authority to step in. Of course, the board is responsible, has fiduciary responsibility for ICANN's operations. Full stop, period. We are responsible. But we do not want a situation where we are forced to intervene on each and every matter, no matter how obvious the answer is.
Thank you very much. Mary.
Thank you, Harold. And again, please jump in, other members of the council and the working group, if I'm misspeaking. That clearly was not the intent. And I think the reality was that the expectation is that the number of disputes of this nature that will escalate into the phrase dispute resolution are not likely to be large. But having said that, I think the fundamental concern, going back to what I said earlier, is that when the board consults the experts, and in this regard, let's separate out the question of which center, which provider is being used. So let's just say experts are brought in, that when the expert's decision is rendered one way or the other, that the board would at least deliberate on that decision and in its deliberations decide whether to accept the recommendation or advice or not. Again, our expectation is that it probably is unlikely for the board to go against the recommendations or advice of the experts, but I think the community would like to at least see that there are those deliberations upon receipt of the decision of the experts, if that's helpful.
Thanks, Mary. Dennis.
Thank you. Dennis Jennings here. I think we need to look carefully at the role of the board, and the role of the board, in my view, in this regard, is an oversight role. It is to oversee the process and to ensure that the process has been carried out carefully, correctly, and completely, and if so, to approve the outcome of the process. It is not to relitigate, to reopen, to rediscuss the merits of the case, because that is, the board doesn't have the expertise to do that, but it is to oversee the process.
Thanks very much. Rita.
I'll cede to Avery, who I see is standing there, if that's okay, and then I'll go next.
Okay, fine. Avery.
Thank you. Speaking as someone who is a member of the group, and I think I wanted to respond to the two issues dealing with the board having to review every proposed TLD, or the board is only in the oversight mode. I think on the REC 6 issues, there was sort of a threshold concern that when a decision was being made of something that was actually a form of restricting expression, it wasn't just that practically it didn't work or a business case wasn't right or there was a technical or financial issue. It was specifically objecting to language. It was specifically restricting on that basis, that kind of decision rose to the level of only the board being in the position to make such a decision. Now, obviously, there was the recommendation of the jurists that said that. But when something, and no one expects there to be any, let alone very many, that rise to that level. But if it comes to the point of sort of saying, this language must not be used in a TLD, this string is against the principles of international and we've been told the international law, then that's something that can only come from the ultimate authority. It's not a due, was the process followed correctly? It is a monumental decision. It is a huge decision, and that's why it was a board-level decision. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Avery. I would ask people speaking at the open mic to identify themselves before they speak, please. Dennis. Rita.
Jennings is always trying to take my spot. So I just want to maybe level set where we are, at least myself on the board, in respect to this Rec 6, because I'm a little confused. This was probably one of my least favorite as an attorney recommendations, and I can remember having many discussions with Susan Crawford and Peter. How do we understand what is offensive to morality on a universal basis, right? I come from America, so we've all seen the terrible movies where, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll are king. But if I went to Iran, I suspect it would be a different story. So I think that in looking in the early days at this recommendation, the board was trying to be as objective as possible, right? Because we don't want to have applicants confused about what the standard is to have a TLD that's acceptable. So we sent staff to look at, is there an international standard that we can try to judge this by? And we came up with what we think is as objective and far-reaching as possible. So that was the first protection to make this as objective as possible. The second was, how do we have an objective entity make this decision? We've all seen what's gone on with XXX, right? To me, that's almost a MOPO issue. Is this offensive to a certain community? We know we've all gotten issues around that, and there was a debate about that. So what the board said was, we want to have an objective standard, and we want an objective body to view this from both a legal perspective to protect the organization, but also to make sure that it's fair and universally applied. So that's I think, where we've been coming from on this reticence to accept this part of the Rec 6.
Thanks very much, Dennis.
Just to be clear, having done that oversight, the board then ratifies the decision. The board decides, yes, but it doesn't relitigate, doesn't debate, it decides.
Christina.
I just wanted to note, in the event that there's any uncertainty on behalf of the board, that the GNSO Council has not yet taken any action to endorse the recommendations that came out of the working group. That's still under discussion. So I just wanted to avoid any uncertainty on behalf of the board as to where we were as a council with that.
Thanks. Mike?
Thank you, Mike Silver here. I think the board is pretty clear that ultimately we have to take the responsibility for decisions, good, bad, or otherwise. And so it's not our intent to relitigate. It's not our intent to go through our own analysis when hopefully people better qualified than ourselves have been through that analysis. But we will be not simply rubber stamping somebody else's decision, because from a pure fiduciary responsibility, that would not be sufficient to meet, certainly in my opinion, the requirements that as directors we exercise our duties in the best interests of the organization. That being said, I have a concern around Reg 6, which is not about matters that are necessarily generally offensive. I think we can all understand that when it comes, as Rita was saying, to sex, drugs, rock and roll, that may be very appealing to some people and offensive to others. And those generally are issues around which people can express their views. To me, the issue is also, for example, if somebody was motivating a new GTLD which was offensive to a particular religion because it specifically opposed that religion, I don't think there would be any question. The bigger concern, in my view, is what we do when the promotion of certain cultures or religions would offend other people. So trying to think of an example that won't offend one particular constituency, or maybe thinking of a constituency that I don't mind offending. I think that the current Rec 6 process would handle any sort of racist remarks, but it doesn't necessarily deal with the question of .Nazi. If somebody wanted to register .Nazi to promote their particular views and their particular approach and to bring content of that type under a single heading. And I think that's something that we have to be more careful about, even more so because some names which are promoting a very valid community may be offensive to another grouping, and so offensive that that grouping may not be actually in a position to raise an objection. And that's one of the questions that hasn't been adequately dealt with, which is where we're getting pushback from the GAC in particular, which is how do we deal with the objection process? They've raised one issue, which is the cost. To me, it goes beyond that, and that is how do we deal with a community who cannot actually come out in public and object to a name because they don't recognize the existence of that community.
Thanks very much, Mike. Any further comments on this topic? If not, I suggest we move on to the next challenges of the new GTLD process. And I'm also interested in talking about the outreach activities done so far. And I'm curious to know what the board's feeling on those are. I'm not sure that actually we're all very clear on what outreach activities have been done, but I was certainly curious to know what the board felt or was expecting in terms of outreach, and that might obviously become a lot more important going forward as we move towards the final applicant guidebook, and then we have to start the communications period. So, Bruce?
Certainly, I think the board, like the GNSO, is very keen to ensure that we make the best use of the budget we have available for communication, and it is a limited budget. And I think the staff would appreciate any ideas and ways of using that budget most effectively. I mean, you could probably spend it all in two full-page advertisements in one of the big national newspapers in the world, and then it's all gone. So I think it's a case of saying, how do we use that limited funding in the most effective way? One of that is which is to actually use the ICANN community itself. You know, I think what the staff can do is produce materials, and those materials can be used widely. We've got ALAC, it's obviously one excellent. We've got the business constituency, we've got intellectual property constituency, so we've got quite a network already. And the other thing which comes back to the point around what we want as the measures, or what do we want as the outcomes of the program, is how do we spread that spend internationally? And you could take a couple of different approaches. You could say that the US, for example, is already well informed, and so we don't spend any money there because industry's done such a great job already, but nobody in Africa knows about it. So should we spend all the money in Africa and zero in the US, or do we spend the same amount in each geographic region? And those are some questions that really you need to know what your measures are. What are we expecting to get out of the program? Is it okay that we only get applications out of North America? And if that's okay, we should spend all our money on North America. So those are the sort of things I think guidance would be useful.
Thanks. With respect to what you're expecting or what help you might want from the GNSO on this, so if I'm understood what you're saying, individual groups that make up the GNSO, obviously they all have contacts and ideas, and you're looking for ideas in that regard. Is that correct? Yeah, Rob.
Thank you. Green button. Yes. First is, thank you very much for the question, and clearly communications is very important on such a large potential program. There has been some communication up to the present. It's been limited in part because the board hasn't made a decision on the timing of launching the program. I think there's a tentative 4-month schedule for the formal communications plan globally, which definitely will be an international effort in all five regions. We will need help. The officer, or the vice president in charge of this is Barbara Clay, our vice president. President of Communications, and she and the group are actively working on preparing for that. They will definitely need community support. We appreciate the gestures we've received already and offers for assistance. If you have additional ideas, please feel free to submit those to me or to Barbara or to other people, but we're going to need your help. It's a large world out there, okay, and numerous parties that could be affected. Obviously, ICANN's operating in 240 countries and territories, so we really would appreciate your help, both in terms of suggestions and which parties might be interested, in assisting in that program. But we take it very seriously, and that has been under development for some time, will continue to be, and thank you again for the question.
Thanks very much, Rod. Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade.
Oh, sorry. Can I get to you next, Mike? Yeah, thanks.
My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm the chair of the business constituency, and I'm going to make a point and ask a question, and I think Rod will be particularly interested in hearing both. I guess I'm a little concerned to hear the idea that we are taking a grassroots approach to education, awareness and information about something as important as the new GTLD program practically and thoroughly and in a technically sound and stable manner. And I'm also concerned that we not take a yay, yay, rah, rah, get yours here now approach, okay? And one of the problems with asking for volunteers is that very often, in order for people to have time to volunteer, it's because they have a vested interest. In the earlier discussion we held here with Kurt, no one who went to the microphone, including myself, declared whether or not they had an interest in the outcome. We owe it to the vast community of users. It's not our job to build markets, right? That's not what ICANN's about. It's the internet users, and it's the stability of the internet. It is the integrity and resiliency of the applications and services that rely on the unique indicators. That's what we founded ICANN for, and that is what we entrust our board to continue to remember. So, of course, managed responsible expansion of the space is very important. Expansion of IDNs is very important. But it takes a neutral and deep understanding of the program to educate people about risk as well as benefits. And I really don't think a grassroots approach is fair to either the people who are going to apply for the registries nor the people who are going to rely on their continued operation.
Thanks. Mike.
Thank you. I'm always happy to defer to Marilyn. Just tying together this question of outreach with the part of the topic that we didn't cover under the first item, and that is the significant work that was done by the working group regarding applicant support and support for needy applicants. And I think there's been a fair degree of misunderstanding around that process. It's something that's very close to my heart, possibly because of the region from which I originate. At the same time, the board's feeling was that the approach taken, and again, potentially we'd given the wrong message when we'd asked the community to go back and do some work on the issue. The response we got was wholly inappropriate for the nature of ICANN and the nature of the organization that is ICANN. We do recognize, though, that new GTLDs do present an opportunity for a number of communities, including communities who don't necessarily have the same economic wherewithal as some of us are fortunate enough to have, and that those communities shouldn't be penalized simply because of a lack of money. So we'd like to continue working with the Cross-Coast Constituency Working Group. And I think there have been some useful indicators given in terms of the direction we'd like to see some of that work proceed. What we don't want to see are lower barriers simply because you don't happen to have money, because we know that those are going to be gamed. We also don't think that creating, you know, first and second class new GTLDs is actually of any real benefit given the nature of the process going forward. It's simply likely to lead to a second class GTLD failing. What we'd rather see is meaningful mechanisms to support those GTLDs in the application phase as well as going forward.
Rod.
Sure, and just to expand on some of the remarks regarding a communication plan, grassroots is one way to communicate, and I think in a bottom-up community, it's very understandable. A lot of parties view bottom-up approaches as being a part of the solution, and it was specifically in different public sessions in the past, the community urged the ICANN staff to take advantage of the community to work on sharing information. That will not be the exclusive means. Clearly, risks will be disclosed to the extent there's consensus on how those risks can be portrayed to parties, but the goal is to share information equally or as fairly as possible to as many parties as possible. So, for example, when our director, Kateem Ture, suggested that we communicate more in Africa about the new GTLD program, he kindly offered to speak at some of the IGF meetings in Africa, two of them, and specifically presented on new GTLDs, and that was because Kateem shared that there was a need in that geography for more communication, and that's exactly the kind of thing we'd be looking to do with not only our board but other members of the community, as well as with other outreach. We've also feel there's a need to share with brand owners the issues involved here, so at least they can take an informed consideration on the decision. Again, if and when the board approves the program. All these comments are conditioned upon that, but the communication plan is being developed, and as always, we look forward to advice and ideas, so thank you.
Thanks very much, Rod. I have Jeff, Jamie, Edmund, and Adrian.
Okay, my question's not on outreach, though, so I don't know if you want to, if other people have outreach or...
No, go on. It's on this topic, yes. The second topic, so go ahead, please.
Okay. My question is on, hopefully getting towards final on this applicant guidebook and moving forward, as a lot of us have an interest in doing. So I have a question. In September, there was a resolution passed on searchable who... Well, there was a resolution creating a data committee. I'm maybe getting the wrong name of it. And then there was a resolution passed that said it was referring to the Board Data Consumer Protection Working Group to study issues and provide information to the board relating to access and privacy to develop recommendations for possible inclusion in the forthcoming version of the applicant guidebook. The proposed final applicant guidebook came out, and all it said at that point was that this issue was referred to it. And so my question is, who is this working group working? Is there going to be any recommendations? If so, when are they going to be provided? Or are we scrapping the working group and just hopefully move forward without any additional things on who is?
Dennis, I understand you're the expert.
Oh, no, I'm not the expert. I just happen to chair the working group. It certainly doesn't make me an expert. The working group has met a couple of times. It has made some recommendations to the board, which the board will consider this week, and it has recommended to the board that the working group be wound up. More than that, I wouldn't want to say. I don't think you'll find there's anything particularly significant there, but it's for the board to receive those recommendations first, if you don't mind. But I don't believe you'll find anything particularly obnoxious.
So I guess the follow-up, though, would I would assume that if it goes to the board and the board says, okay, it will go out for comment, it's not just going to be included in a final... I mean, I don't know what's in there. Maybe it's nothing, so... No. Oh, okay.
Trust us.
Okay, then withdraw. Well, sounds like we can move forward then.
Okay, Jamie.
Well, I would like to come back to the outreach issue. I don't know if I understood well, but I would like to bring my experience in regions like Brazil, where I come from. Well, it's a large country, and community work alone doesn't do the work to make the awareness of the potential risk to the many companies of many sizes that there is in this launch of an amount of GTLDs and the possible defense. And I would say many of you don't know many of the brand names that are local, but they are companies of the billion-dollar range. So this is a potential risk that, let alone the community extends in Brazil to 60 or 50 people, me, Wanda, and I don't know if we alone are able to do all the outreach that is that we should be done.
Thank you, Jamie. I had Edmund next.
Thank you. Just a quick comment, actually, when sitting here listening to Marilyn and then Rod's response, wonder if the board or staff have considered actually using our ALSs from from the Rallos to conduct a lot of the outreach. That seems to be like a meaningful channel that is within our community, which is grassroots related too.
It's a great idea, and I believe staff is already having some conversations. And to give people an idea of the magnitude of the budget that's available for this specific effort, it's somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million. Okay, and so that's how much is in the plan that's approved by the community in our current operating plan to work in this endeavor. And I think the question is, and as always, is obviously we want to get the maximum bang for the buck. So to the extent we can partner as appropriate with parts of the community, we're happy to, or partner with others. Also governments, some governments have offered to help in their geographies and regions. A concrete example would be in Germany. The government hosted a conference, which I believe the name was Neue Adresse im Internet. That was in Berlin last November, and some of us spoke at that event, which was heavily attended by different stakeholders in Germany. But that was organized under the auspices or in relationship with the government and others. So we think governments can have a very helpful role as well, and we're open to working with those that would like to. We will be formally informing all the governments we have relationships with of the need to communicate this in their territories if they wish to assist.
Thank you. Adrian.
Thanks for the opportunity. Just by way of feedback, with respect to outreach, in my discussions in Australia to various brand owners and trademark holders and attorneys and so on and so forth, once they've heard about the opportunity, and not all of them have, some of the feedback we've got about the website, the information that was available there with ICANN, everything's been very, very positive. And I think ICANN should be commended on the initiative and information that they've put forward within that website, and I think that's been fantastic. And I think the only thing that I think would help more would be, and I don't know how you would logistically do this, but to make staff available to either, you know, whether face-to-face or in some way, shape or form, to get some granularity and also some authority to the process. Because it's one thing, you know, I have an invested interest when I go out and talk to these folks. And you know, we always try to steer them back to the authority. And I think it's great to get that direct voice, you know, where we can. So I think I would encourage, you know, whether in some way, shape or form, staff to be represented or be available to be represented, you know, when required to these folks out at the perimeter. But some really positive things coming back from the folks. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Adrian. And that'll be part of the plan we work on, and I hope that you'll offer some of those suggestions to Barbara and others as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, any further questions on this topic? Or shall we move into the, in the interest of time, let's move into the AOC topic, and perhaps, Peter, I can let you introduce that one.
Yes, thanks, Stephen. One of the outcomes, of course, is it made me late for this meeting, so I apologise for coming in a bit late. The affirmation, the ATRT has just been meeting with the GAC. So outcomes of the affirmation of commitments, I think they probably divide them into sort of two parts. One is the tangible. That's quite easy to look at. We've got three review teams now underway. The first one of those, the ATRT, is reporting here, say, discussing its recommendations with the GAC. Its report was out for public comment, including the very large Berkman case studies and other analysis. And there's the Who Is One and the security team. So those tangible results are visible, if you like. Those review teams are up and running. Probably more significant, I suppose, is the intangible or less concrete, and that's the effect that the affirmation and the commitments that it contains is actually having on ICANN. In many ways, it's a crystallisation and gives a whole lot of oomph to some of the very early principles that are embedded in the Green Paper and the White Paper about transparency and accountability and diversity, etc., that actually led to the formation of ICANN. But what it's done is it's created a whole new, say, impetus to those principles and subtly added and changed those. The staff have actually prepared a very detailed paper, which I'm not sure, Rod, if it's available. It was certainly given to the accountability and review team, listing all of the different activities that are underway. And Rod can talk more about how he's taking this through, because Rod certainly embraced this whole concept very, very thoroughly. And staff are encouraged in all of their aspects of their work to consider how the affirmation of commitments is going to affect the outputs. So I suppose I'll stop there. There's the tangible work going on in terms of the reviews. The public comment period is closed for the first one. The team is meeting, as I say, here with the GAC and the board, and will be finalising its report so that it can deliver on time against a very, very difficult timetable. I think that team's done an extraordinary job, and the board's looking forward very much to getting the recommendations from that first one. The other two reviews are coming along, and then there's the, if you like, the cultural change inside the corporation. And Rod, perhaps that's time to hand to you to talk about the way it's being dealt with inside the corporation by staff.
Sure. Thank you very much, Peter. The affirmation has had a very great impact on the organization. First, starting with just the values discussions and where it needs to internally and being internalized as an organization, and then driving out through quite a significant number of initiatives. Soon within signing the affirmation of commitments, we started a bottom-up process within ICANN with every department and group having a brainstorming session where each employee or staff team member would have to present part of the affirmation so that they all presented the whole document and debated and discussed it, and discussed specifically what did the part of the language they were presenting mean to their team. What did it mean to them and their job? What did it mean to their team? So whether you're looking at compliance or IANA or policy, across the board, this was done across the organization. And that was to spread education, because the key thing is obviously a very important document, a lot of language, and many different ways to interpret how it could be implemented into operations. And what better way to do that in the organization than in a bottom-up fashion? And so we did that. I think we completed that roughly within 2 months of the signing of the affirmation of commitments. I then made an executive decision and took one of our very strong vice presidents with, I think, almost 10 years of history at ICANN, Denise Michelle, and asked her to become my advisor directly, advisor to the CEO, specifically on accountability and transparency. She has worked full-time on that effort since then. And is also beginning to support the new review teams, not just the first review team. One of the other actions that Denise has worked on over the past 12 months is documenting where does accountability start? Well, part of where it starts, besides the values and internalizing it, is in getting a baseline. And what's the baseline for the question of how we followed through on our commitments is to document all the board resolutions since our founding in 1998 and to take a look at how have we done in fulfilling those resolutions. So Denise has been involved in putting every single resolution since the founding of this organization online, in a wiki, and with links to documents that speak to the resolution of those issues. This was a very significant effort that took very large amounts of her time. And in addition to Denise's support for the review teams, of course, there were other staff members that have spent very significant amounts of time on a fairly dedicated basis out of our Brussels office, but much more broadly across the staff and management team. There's been a very significant commitment to being responsive and setting as a top priority responding to the ATRT. And I'm very pleased to have heard as CEO numerous times compliments for how well the staff has done in supporting that team. And that's, as you know, a lot of work, huge work for the team review team members, and also very considerable work for the ICANN staff. That's just the baseline. I mean, I could go on and on. There's so many actions that have taken place as a part of this. We also posted the President's Strategy Committee recommendations on the same wiki with information. One of the things that I feel positive about is you all know about the ICM decision, and that's gone on for many, many years. So I got a call one Friday afternoon or evening from the general counsel saying, we just lost the panel, and they decided against us. And my first question was, I said, well, I assume this is a public decision. He said, yes. I said, we need to put it online immediately. Help me draft the tweet right now. And within 15 minutes of me getting the beginning of a call to be informed that we lost a decision, we communicated to the world that we did. That's transparency. It's not sharing the information that's always a good news. It's sharing information that's important and relevant to a community. I then asked our general counsel, I said, can the document be made public? And he said, probably we need to review it and redact it possibly. It may have some private information. We had the entire decision document posted within 2 hours. Okay, and so I think that we've done our best, and there's always much room for improvement, not only in that, in many other areas. So whether it was posting Nairobi event security risks, whether it was in conducting these very significant economic studies that have been done, the board approval for 24-hour posting of resolutions, which we've implemented, to employee training, the publishing of board papers, the responses to public comments. Anyway, so there's many actions. I'll make sure, Peter, if that document's not already published, that it is. But there's been a lot of actions throughout the organization.
Thanks very much, Rod, for that thorough explanation. Does anyone want to comment? Sorry, Christina.
There have been a number of concerns expressed within the trademark community about the timing, for example, of the close of the current public comment period on the proposed final applicant guidebook happening on the same day as what is reported to be a scheduled board vote. And in particular, the concern is that that timing suggests that the timing leads to a greater concern about whether or not some of the responsibilities under the affirmation of commitments are really becoming institutionalized such that they have real meaning. And I was just wondering what the board's view is or response to that concern.
Sounds like the board would like the staff or the CEO to respond, so I'm going to have Kurt help me because he was involved in all the details of that process.
Well, you know, I think you're right. The attempt was to, you know, I just discussed this before, was to, you know, using the budget as a model, be able to take comment on the very latest in the guidebook up to a board decision. And I think the board's going to listen to the community and what everybody has to say. And if it's clear that, you know, the community needs more time or something like that, the board might act one way. If it seems that the board can adequately consider all the community comment before considering it, it's the other way. But it's meant to do exactly that. It's meant to provide the opportunity to comment on the very latest guidebook up until the moment the board considers it. And you know, and so, what's the answer at the end? That the board has the goals of the AOC and transparency and accountability in mind when it makes those decisions, because it gets to listen to the community.
So am I correct in understanding from what you're saying that it's the stated intention of staff to be providing the board with continual updates on public comment up to and including literally the vote? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Rita.
I think I'd like to just make the comment, Christina, that that does not seem to me like that's a great practice to engage in. So I think your comment is well taken, and I think as Rod is saying, this is something that we're iterating towards, and hopefully that will become the exception, not the rule.
Thanks very much. Marilyn.
Marilyn Cade. My comment is probably a follow-on to Christina's, because on Friday we received, the community received, and I assume the board also received, the phase two of the economic analysis. That is new information. It is an extension of, significant extension of any previous information, and I would say it's new information. I think it'd be pretty hard, we'd be pretty hard pressed not to say there's new information in there. So that new information has to be, I would think, understood and analyzed and looked at against existing content in the DAG, and has to be, I believe, according to our bylaws, new information needs to be taken into account. So I think we've got a timing problem. And my second point would be, I don't see a comment period on that. So I'm mystified on how the new data, the new information gets taken into account, even if the staff is iterating on a 24-hour basis between now and the 10th. And I'm also interested in the comment period and why there wasn't one associated in the announcement.
You know, I spoke to this earlier, right? And
not to everyone.
Okay. So I think it's the same thing that the board is reading the economic study now and has in fact scheduled their own briefing on it for Wednesday to discuss it. The board is going to listen to the comment here about initial reactions to the economic study, and then taking into account that public comment, responding to it, react in a way that decides to open up a public comment forum so it can understand the community's interpretation of the study or not.
So you're opening up a public comment forum?
Yeah. Not. Yeah, so what I said, and it's for clarification by Peter, but the board's going to listen to what everybody here has to say during the week as far as making all decisions associated with the guidebook and opening up new public comment fora.
I'll just make a personal suggestion because I've been approached by others saying they would like to comment on that report, and I think that is appropriate that we receive comment on that report. My personal advice to people has been to register their comments under the applicant guidebook section, which is generally a currently open comment forum. If another forum gets opened up, fine, but practically, if you've got a comment to submit today, I suggest you submit it there because that's where I will be reading.
Thanks, Peter.
I just want to echo what Rita said and to say that this is a matter of real concern for the board, Marilyn and Christina. The ability to make a properly informed decision obviously is very important to us, and to hear all the comment on all of the material. And we are frankly struggling exactly how we're going to manage this. So just acknowledge that it's a genuine concern that we share with you.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Just a personal comment or observation that there's always going to be more comment that could be made. It'll be unending. We know that. So, but at some point, I think that we started to see certain parts of the guidebook, some comments and concerns beginning to diminish. And at some point, I would hope we can start seeing at least parts or some of this guidebook begin to get closed off so that we can start moving towards that ultimate goal of having this thing completed and released. So I don't think we have to have this unending comment going round and round on every part of the guidebook.
Thanks, Tim. Harold?
Speaking for myself only, we've been working on this stuff for 10 years. During this week, I will be listening for exactly two kinds of comments. It's comments that say we disagreed with you last time, we disagreed with you the previous time, and we still disagree with you. And there's comments of the form, there is new information available which makes me change my mind about something. The first class of comment, I don't see a reason for letting that delay the decision process, because no matter how much we delay, the still same comments are going to be made. The second kind of comment, that there's new information available, my mind has changed or might change, that's important because it leads to change in how we perceive what the community position is. If there is no change in the community position, there is no reason to delay. If there is change, there might be.
Thank you very much. We're nearly out of time, and I did want to get to the last topic, which was more a question that the board was asking the GNSO on what... I didn't want to put you on the spot. Okay, the Tonkin question. About how we would measure the success of the new GTLD program. And I guess one of the, as far as the GNSO is concerned, one of the criteria could be how close the final product is to the original recommendations. But, Elliot, is your question on this or on the previous topic?
It was on the economic study in particular. I'm happy to be very brief or to defer to.
Try and be very brief. I'd like to see that.
I would. I will continue to play straight man for you for the rest of the week. You know, I do want to say that the second economic study I found interesting in that did a lot of work and really reinforced the primary conclusion from the first economic study, which I thought was a very positive one. You can't know the future and you can't study it based on the past. And so I think it was strong work. I do encourage people to comment on it, but I want to say I felt that study did a great job of ticking the box and setting us up to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elliot. So does anyone from council want to speak to what measure of success, how we would measure the success of the new GTLD program? We have about 1 minute left, so
Christina wants to.
Adrian, Christina.
This is not a positive suggestion, but more of a negative. Namely, I don't think that one accurate indicator of the success should be the number of applications received.
I think maybe how much of the budget is used on lawsuits, and then work back from there. That was just being funny.
So just to set context, I think one of the strategic objectives that ICANN has is to introduce or improve competition, consumer trust and consumer choice. And that's one of the commitments we have under the affirmation of commitments we have with the community. The new GTLD program is being talked about at one of the activities to improve that area. But ICANN as an organisation does not have measures on any of the topics of competition, consumer trust, or consumer choice. So we have no measures today, have no measures in the strategic plan, we have no measures for the new GTLD program. But what we have committed to do also is to review ourselves against these things. And I, as an engineer, don't see how you can review something if you haven't actually defined what the measures are that you're being reviewed against. And Christina, I completely agree with you. I don't think the number of TLDs on its own is a measure. The sort of measure I would be encouraging, but I really want to get input from the GNSO, is measures such as strings that relate to cultures outside of North America, strings that relate to new languages, strings that relate to new applications. So those are the sorts of things I'd hope to be seeing around the topic of consumer choice. Competition, maybe we're looking at competition perhaps in the available of organisations that can provide DNS services. It could be a number of different measures of competition. But if we don't define what those measures are, I don't see how you can successfully do a review. So I just encourage and seek advice from the GNSO on what these measures should be, so that when the review happens in a year's time, we've actually got something substantial to review against.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut it short here because the board members have to go and we're out of time. Andre, I know you had a question, and Adrian as well. I'm sorry, I apologize to you both. We've run over time. I just wanted to thank all the board members for coming for what I thought was a very interesting and fruitful session under this new format. And just maybe, Rod, if you want to make some closing remarks.
Sure, Peter may wish to follow, but just wanted to mention the document, Peter, you referred to regarding many of the staff projects to uphold the affirmation of commitments is posted online on the ICANN website. If Stefan wants me to send him a link, I can do that, but it's quite a detailed document. It's there. One other small note is just I mentioned sharing some of the risks of the new GTLD programs. Clearly, ICANN as an organization can only share what's legally cleared on that topic, you know, and what's legally appropriate in our position. So I just wanted to mention that. But thank you very much for the constructive feedback. At least I learned a lot, including good suggestions on the communications program. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. The next session will be, we have a break now, half an hour, until 4 o'clock. The next session will be a working session on the RAA. That will be chaired by Steve Metalitz.